We'll move to what is scheduled as case number 6, Zhang versus Gonzalez.
Good morning to the Honorable Court. My name is Gang Zhou. I'm here to represent the petitioner in this case. Your Honors, I believe in an admittal trial such as an immigration court, the findings of fact, including the credibility finding and the ultimate decision whether to grant or deny relief, must be based on the record in its entirety, not some of it, not part of it, much less something that's not even there. I think the opposite happened in this case, which can be clearly seen in the immigration judge's summary of the fact, which appears in the appendix at page 43 and 45, which I quote in its entirety in my brief at page 27 and 28. And I start with certain things that's not in the record, but cited by the judge. For instance, the immigration judge said, I quote, the petitioner testified that her teacher, Jia, did not teach Falun Gong. And if you look at the record, what exactly was stated by the petitioner was, my teacher did not tell me what he was teaching me. I think there's a critical difference between someone telling you he was not teaching you something and someone not telling you what he was teaching you.
Mr. Zhao, it seems to me on this record, I mean, clearly what this court's job to do is to review the ultimate decision of the immigration authorities. It seems pretty clear that they at least thought that Ms. Zhang was a Falun Gong practitioner. But one then has to also look at the alternative ruling, which is that the things that happened to her simply were not sufficiently awful to amount to persecution back when she was in China, and that she has not shown the requisite likelihood of future prosecution. It strikes me that that's where your argument needs to focus. I mean, I think that you make a very powerful argument that they at least thought that she was a Falun Gong practitioner.
Your Honor, again, I respect submit. I think my response to court's question again starts with the IJ's summary. And the IJ did mention that the petitioner was detained on March 5th, 2001. But then the IJ mentioned nothing about what happened to her during those 2 weeks.
Well, what are we to do with the fact that I guess in her oral testimony she doesn't repeat what she said in her written application about hands being tied and deprivation of food and ability to visit restrooms and that sort of thing?
Your Honor, that goes through details, I believe, because I was not the attorney for the trial. I believe there are two issues here. Number one, unless the petitioner's testimony, for some reasons, gives the impression that she did not recall anything about her detention time, then there was no negative inference about what she could not remember about that. I believe at this point, as a trial of fact, the immigration judge should have put out what she knew at that point. The immigration judge could have asked her, do you remember anything else about what happened during those 2 weeks? For example, if it turned out that she did not appear to remember anything about what happened to her, then the immigration judge had a powerful basis for finding her not credible, because the immigration judge could tell her, unfortunately, I have to tell you, your written application said a lot of terrible things that happened to you. How come you don't remember them? Nobody asked her that question.
Right, but I mean, I guess the difficulty here is that the immigration judge just says she was detained for 2 weeks, then released. She claims that she was not tortured, although others who were Falun Gong members were. But if this were a case where she actually was kept by the authorities for 2 weeks without any food, with deprivations that were extremely serious, it might seem like a different case to us. But why wouldn't she have, if she's testifying anyway, why wouldn't she have said that?
Your Honor, I could not go back to the mindset of the petitioner at that point. I believe, I think that would eventually has to come out from a remand, because at that point, the immigration judge could ask that critical question. How come during your first trial, did not even mention anything? Mm-hmm. If she could not come up with a reasonable answer, I think that's where the case will either make or break it. Because,
But in your view, it was impermissible for the immigration judge, without saying something about it at least, to draw an inference from her failure to mention it in her testimony and the fact that it is mentioned in the written application, to draw an adverse inference.
Your Honor, I believe the issue here is whether the petitioner had the opportunity to testify to the fact, because the petitioner was not there just to make a speech with an audience. Rather, she was there to be questioned. Someone has to ask her that question, what happened to you during your detention? Nobody, including the judge, never asked her that critical question. That's why we had this problem here. Now, Your Honor asked me why she did not say that. My answer to that is I do not know, because the judge even did not know that. So without knowing that, the judge reached a finding of fact and the ultimate decision to deny without knowing a critical answer to a critical question that was never asked. That's why this was not based on the record in its entirety. That's what makes the finding of fact 40, that makes the denial reversible. Therefore, I respect ask the court to remand this case for a new trial, at least let the petitioner have an opportunity to explain what she did not state the first time. Further, I think more importantly, I believe the IJ's finding of fact left out a lot of things that were critical to petitioner's claim. For example, the immigration judge did not mention that she was expelled. She was expelled from school on Falun Gong charges. And that was a critical issue. I do believe she mentioned that. She mentioned she returned to school 2 weeks later. Then on January 20th, she was expelled and being told, unfortunately, you have something with Falun Gong. Get out of here. That was a critical piece of testimony and evidence. It was not even mentioned in IJ's finding of fact.
Can't we rely on the petitioner, though, to indicate that what the nature of the persecution was that she's claiming that she will be subjected to if she's sent back to China?
Your Honor,
that's the essential basis of her whole petition. You're saying if she didn't say anything about it, we ought to send it back and let her say something about it.
But Your Honor, that's not my point. I first have to apologize for my time is being up. However, let me just finish my answer to the court question. I'm not asking the court to do that. Rather, I'm asking this court to remand this case to give the immigration judge another opportunity to look at the record as a whole. I believe the immigration judge finding fact leaves a lot of critical things that were testified to in court. That's the critical piece of this case. If this was mentioned, it was now summarized in the summary, and the decision was reached on basis of something that was either not there or was not included. That was that is what makes this case critically flawed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning. May it please the court, Manuel Palau for the Attorney General in this case. This is a case where the petitioner simply failed to meet her burden of proof to establish that she was an adherent of the Falun Gong movement either in China or here in the U.S.
But surely they regarded her as a Falun Gong member. The government doesn't take the position that if the Chinese government thinks that you're Falun Gong and punishes you and, you know, throws you in prison and so on, that they have to be right.
I believe that she was deemed to be a member, yes, Your Honor.
She was deemed to be a member.
Right.
So maybe we should look at whether the immigration judge, on that basis, correctly concluded that she wasn't sufficiently persecuted to qualify for asylum.
We would say she was not, Your Honor. I believe this has a lot of parallels to the Liu case, which was very similar. In that case, a young woman was deemed to be a member of the Falun Gong, even though she was not. She was detained for several days, interrogated. I believe her hair was pulled. She was slapped. The authorities made visits to her parents' house, ransacked the house, pushed her mother down. And this court said that, yes, that treatment was deplorable, but under the INA, that does not rise to the level of persecution. And
but
I would submit
about,
that...
You know, I think whether this is like Liu or not depends very much on whether we should look at this statement in her asylum application. Because in Liu, we don't have a two-week duration. If somebody were really kept from food and away from restrooms and you know, tied up in a painful position for a full two-week period, that at least takes it beyond Liu, whether that takes it all the way, you know, we could consider whether that's enough to... But she doesn't testify about it. The judge doesn't say one thing or another. I don't know if the judge read the asylum application or not. He doesn't say a word about it. So.
Yeah, Your Honor, on that point, that's why I think what we have here is a failure to meet the burden of proof. There is that statement in her application, but I would submit that statement is somewhat vague. There is a reference clearly to hands being bound. Then there's a reference to food and water, et cetera, but it's not clear what the connection is between the bound hands and that. I believe in her, in the petitioner's brief, there's a representation which says that was done so they couldn't practice the Falun Gong exercises. It's not real clear in the record. The fact of the matter here is that she was present at this hearing with counsel. He had a full opportunity to draw out any and all details of her detention, and for some reason he failed to do so. I would also point out that in the hearing prior to the merits hearing, the immigration judge who had handled several Falun Gong cases previously indicated that he was looking for certain types of evidence in this case.
But what I'm looking, just for convenience anyway, at petitioner's brief on pages 22 and 23. This is point 23. He's numbered them. It says, the petitioners and the others had both of their hands restrained behind their back, and then I guess this is a quote from the asylum application, so that they could not go to restroom, go for food, and sleeping.
That's the quote, correct,
yeah,
yes. That's in the application.
That's in the application. And is it your position that that's just too vague, that might mean sometimes as opposed to always? Or what's
well,
your
Honor, I believe that if she was not allowed to eat or drink or go to the bathroom for 2 weeks, that would have come out in her testimony. That's pretty stunning treatment. All she said was, I was held. I wasn't allowed to speak to any other detainees. That's a detail she mentioned in testimony. She described torture that was done to other Falun Gong detainees, but not to her. And I think that it's not the immigration judge's place to draw out additional facts of what may or may not have happened, especially if she has counsel with her whose job it is to adduce this testimony to meet her burden of proof that she is, in fact, a refugee and does qualify, perhaps, for asylum.
Is the statement of political asylum part of the evidence in the case?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
And so that's something that the immigration judge, those lines that were just quoted, had before him?
Yes, that's part of the record, Your Honor. But the fact, a lot of these cases turn on whether the testimony is the same as the information in the application or not. He may have just, there were several fact discrepancies between her application and her testimony that was drawn out. So the mere fact that it's in the record is of some weight, but I would submit that the testimony is far more significant weight to be accorded to that, because it's live, she's present, she's recounting what happened. She didn't forget that. She put it in her application.
Well, but, you know, the thing that would have been nice, if the immigration judge had said in his oral opinion, one of the reasons I'm ruling against this is because, as you just pointed out, something as dramatic as what this would have been if it had happened didn't come out in her oral testimony, and therefore I'm going to place greater weight on her oral testimony as more accurate because it's not live. You know, you can imagine what such an explanation would have sounded like. It's just that we don't have it.
In a perfect world, Your Honor, sure he would have said that. But I would, as you know, the caseloads here are crushing. Despite that, I do believe that the petitioner here got her full day in court. And again, she had an attorney there whose job it was to qualify her for asylum. He knows what the burden is. Perhaps the judge would have could have said something like, you wrote this in your application, but you didn't testify to it, therefore I have some doubt about whether the facts stated in your application were really true or not. He didn't say that, but these are not perfect decisions. The standard review here is substantial evidence, and I believe that this record is extremely thin on even her adherence to Falun Gong. Admittedly, she was deemed to be one in China. I'm not arguing that she wasn't.
See, that's the other troubling thing about the immigration judge's opinion. He seems to be so concerned with the question whether she really was a Falun Gong practitioner in China that he overlooks the possibility that maybe they were just treating her that way and it was deemed.
Well, I don't think, no, he expressly mentioned in his decision that the problem is she didn't know what to believe because her testimony went back and forth. She denied that she was a member of Falun Gong in China. So he first said, I'm not sure if you were or not, but secondly, his opinion expressly says, if you're saying that they deemed you to be one, then I find what they did to you did not rise to the level of persecution. And I think another key issue which we're ignoring here is, does she belong to Falun Gong now? And a testimony on that is extremely sparse. It was a single self-serving statement that, yes, I am, because I go to the park once a week and do exercises with Falun Gong practitioners, period. There was no corroboration whatsoever that she's taken it up since coming to the U.S. And it is clear that she did not practice it in China while deemed to be a member. She herself denied ever belonging to it. So the issue now is she a Falun Gong practitioner since coming to the U.S., as she claims she is?
But actually what he says here isn't quite what you said. He says, if her claim is that the authorities believed her to be a Falun Gong practitioner and therefore she has reason to fear arrest, detention, and being killed, as she now claims, it seems a rather dubious belief on her part since she herself was not a Falun Gong practitioner and since the authorities released her after 2 weeks. And then it goes on to say, this court's held brief detentions without more don't constitute persecution. That's not quite the same thing as saying if they were treating you as though you were Falun Gong, still what they did to you isn't bad enough.
Okay, well, I apologize for that, Your Honor. I think what he's saying there is that the degree, the fact is they were concerned that she either was practicing or was about to become an adherent, and I believe the purpose of their harassment campaign was to keep her from doing so. They kept telling her, you know, stop, you know, you're going down the wrong path, stop doing this. So I think that his point there was is that since she in fact was not a follower, that eventually the authorities would realize this and stop harassing her, because that was the point of their campaign. But I would state, Your Honor, that the burden of proof here is clear. I don't believe it was met. I don't think the evidence in this case compels a finding that she was persecuted for this belief, and it certainly doesn't compel the fact finding that she is now a member of this practice. And there was just the board has said that the weaker your evidence, the more the need for corroboration. And here, there was just not one scrap of evidence beyond her very brief testimony that she is currently a believer. And I think that there's not a remand available for a do-over, can I put more evidence on? Because here, all the due process requirements were met. She had an attorney all the way through, and she simply failed, for whatever reason, to put on sufficient evidence that she belongs to this group which is being persecuted. For that reason, we would ask the court to affirm the decision below.
Thank you, counsel. How much time? You have 1 minute for rebuttal.
Your Honor, I think the key issue here is the credibility. I do believe there's no valid credibility finding in this case. It must be returned. It must be reversed, because without a valid credibility finding in this case, then the IJ's finding as to whether IJ believes this person is a Falun Gong member or not cannot stand on the record. I do believe the record supports the finding that she at least was treated by Chinese authority as a Falun Gong follower. She was detained with 20 other Falun Gong practitioners together, and she also testified, I believe, in court that what she did in St. Louis, Missouri, with another local Falun Gong group was exactly the same as what she learned with her teacher, Jia. At least in retrospect, She learned Falun Gong in China, and she was treated as such, and she was mistreated and persecuted as such. Therefore, I do believe this case, the immigration judge could be finding what was reversible. This case should be remanded for a new trial. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. And we move to